egyik kurátora, és ennek az eseménynek a keretét a Lakatlan című, Lakatlan Budapest című programunk adja, ami azzal a kérdéssel foglalkozik, hogy egyrészt miért van annyi üres ingatlan a városainkban, másrészt mit lehetne kezdeni ezekkel az üres ingatlanokkal, hogyan lehetne ezeket az ingatlanokat olyan civil, szociális, társadalmi, kulturális energiák becsatornázására használni, amik ezt a várost egy jobb, élhetőbb várossá alakítanák. Átváltok angolra. I switched to English because I think we have an international audience and especially we have an international lineup. I was starting just to introduce myself and the Hungarian Contemporary Architecture Center that has been organizing a series of lectures and debates and workshops on the possibilities, problem and possibilities of vacant properties in Budapest. We've been in throughout this process very much inspired by practices in the Netherlands, because we found that since the late 2000s, early 2010s, there has been a lot of attempts to, let's say, rethink the built heritage of the country, to rethink the spatial resources of the country, and to create different kinds of policies and strategies on levels of municipalities, levels of the national government, but also involving a lot of, let's say, bottom-up activities and professional engagements. So we've had a few workshops with different Dutch actors. We have people from municipalities, we had architecture offices, and I think tonight we have maybe one of the most complex group here with us, Space and Matter, which is an architecture office based in Amsterdam. But what they do is going way beyond of what we imagine as architecture, because I think you deal with a lot of areas which people traditionally wouldn't associate with architecture. So I think it's a very good lesson for architects in Hungary that architecture can go way beyond mere design, and you can also organize the social processes which are shaping our built environment. I think we met first in Rotterdam maybe a year and a half ago in the frame of a funding urbanism lecture series, and then I think we met in Rome a few months ago, and I was quite interested how these ideas can also inspire different contexts. So the idea for these days now is that we'll start with a presentation with Space and Matter, with Martin and Thiert. And tomorrow they will be with us for the workshop, and they'll help us elaborate some ideas for the building's future. So thank you very much, Martin and Thiert, to make it all the way here. So please welcome Space and Matter.
Thank you, Levante. Just a special thanks to Cake for inviting us, for bringing us here, for, well, putting it all together in this very special venue. And also thanks to the audience for showing up in these large numbers. Let's kick it off, because I think we'll need at least 1 hour. We have quite a bunch of slides to go through. Check. Yes, there he is again. The Office of Space and Matter, me, Martijn Pol, and Geert Hakau. We initiated the office back in 2009. That's where you also see the third partner, Sascha Glassel. And the three of us are founding a architectural and urban design office with some experience in offices prior to setting it up in 2009, where we actually started to frame ourselves a mission when being an architectural and urban design office. At the start of the crisis, and seeing what the past has brought us and the decades before us, and also some experience we've gained, that we've actually acknowledged that maybe architecture and urban planning have grown apart from society. So how can we bring that back? How can we add more relevance to our projects? How can we make our projects more socially and more socio-culturally specific, and to be existing in another manner instead of just providing the space? I'll give a brief introduction to the office in this sense, and then we'll start flipping through some projects, and then mainly focusing on what's the driver behind these projects, and what's the methodology, what's the tools that made the projects work, because eventually in the workshop, that's also where we want to provide this kind of inspiration to also give you a hand in terms of maybe reusing these kind of methodologies and strategies behind the project. So back in 2009, setting up office within this beautiful building, but only because of the fact that there were some desks for rent in the office of a real estate developer. Real estate development was shrinking already from 2008, 2009, so we could pull up office by renting a small desk there in a developer's office, where we thought, well, that's nice. Yeah, maybe there are some future opportunities working together with this guy instead of and setting up office in a more architecturally or a more creative environment where multiple architects would reside, because we don't do business with architects, we need to do business with developers. So that also taught us directly from the beginning what is our role as architects. And we've been practicing, we've been studying, and actually being in that office together with the developer, sharing lunch, sharing time, having a discourse, we actually find out that our role within the entire in the effect of defining space and having an effect on the spatial realm was maybe even more defined by the developer, since he was the guy framing the question. He was already laying out the blueprint. And then the question was proposed to an architect in asking for a spatial answer and providing an answer in a spatial configuration. Whereas we thought, well, if we want to add relevance to our projects, if we want to go deeper than just providing a spatial answer, maybe we should be the guys to frame the answer and to provide the blueprint, to provide the DNA structure of the actual question. So looking through the lens of a developer, that's what we've caught up by being in that office. So from 2009 all the way back to today, this is our office right now, this is the bunch, this is the team. We're in a different location, downtown Amsterdam, and it's like a big family having a lot of fun and taking you through a bunch of projects. What I already mentioned, our vision or our mission actually to add relevance in our projects from a more socio-cultural specific sense, how to make our projects more specific. Let's start with our vision on society. In society, we see, ourselves, and everybody's different, everybody's individual. But on the other hand, if we take a closer look, there is lots of similarities, and there is people which have like-minded ideas, and only because of the internet and the use of internet and the behavior we expose on the internet, we are capable of organizing ourselves and finding our like-minded peers. But at the same time, we actually see that there's a schism or a differentiation between our behavior in physical space. And when living in an apartment building, you don't even know your direct neighbor, but at the same time, you're more connected than ever with, your friends or your interest groups or your professional network, etc. So while at the same time being disconnected in a physical sense, you're more connected than ever in a virtual sense, which is actually fascinating us, and we want to provide a more inclusive environment. So could we not use the internet, or could we not use this phenomenon as the internet as a tool in itself to organize this collective interest and embed that into our projects, where our projects will become more social and cultural specific? And actually, if stating that we are living in a more individualized society, we actually think that the contrary is true, that we're more connected than ever, we're more organized collectively, where actually we is the new me, as a statement which will be a red line also in some of our projects. And starting from the vision of the differentiation within society, we see that we can add relevance in our projects by making projects more specific if we are capable of more precisely targeting user groups, or maybe the user groups should be enabled to organize themselves and then provide this more specific demand, and helping them in framing the question for a spatial demand, which eventually makes the project more interesting than just generic architecture or generic questions. So that's what you see. It could be theme-based, it's common interest or interest-based urbanism, interest-based architecture in an abstract sense. Now we'll start to talk you through a whole series of projects, and for every project we'll pinpoint one specific tool or one specific perspective within that project. Starting with the first one, where we see that community as a tool is a very viable instrument. For example, in this AV House project, which is a multi-tenant building as a newly built structure, where the real estate developer in whose office we were renting a desk, so eventually there was the first opportunity, he found out that a multi-tenant building is the equivalent to one big tenant, But since the big tenants are not there, I have to cluster multiple smaller tenants in one building in order to develop a building. Where we posed him the question, what's the added value of having multiple small tenants in the building? Because there's much more effort, much more back office organization. The small tenants want shorter term contracts. So should we not investigate that actually this or these multiple tenants should frame a social network, and that they should be part of a social network within the building, that there's an added value to be residing in this building. So also in the architectural sense, this community, this social structure needs to be hosted within the building. So we made a building within the office building, which is actually the community house, which is the more informal place to get together and to bump into each other, have small talk, and maybe eventually business come out while being there and working together. So when entering the building, you'll see and the more informal building, the more house-like building within the building. That's where you share the good coffee, that's where you read a newspaper, that's where you have lunch, etc. So this is more the collective space, which facilitates the relations in the social network. Architecturally, again, this is the villa or the house within the building, and then this is the more collective spaces where you bump into each other and find each other. Of course, the staircase as a vertical element is a very important connecting element because it subdivides floors and it also needs to connect floors. Stereotypically, like in your own family house, there will be the wedding pictures of your sister and the picture of your grandma. Same here, there's the picture of the tenants within the staircase of the house. Shared facilities, because it was audiovisual tenants and targeting actually to a very specific group of tenants. Where also sharing functions is an elementary part, like having this small cinema when I want to show my animation production to a client. I cannot afford a small cinema myself, but if we all together as multiple small tenants, we could share this space, and so you own more and you pay less. So also in that sense, make it commercially more interesting. Well, at the same time, if a building on the opposite side of the street would have a lower rent, you would not take yourself out of this social network because the social network is more valuable than the actual rent you pay. So that's what kicked off the development in a, well, quite rapid pace, and the building was filled up during the crisis, and that's what made the building happen, and it was constructed and erected by actually reframing the question which was asked to us.
All right, initiation. 2009 wasn't a very good year to start the office because there were very little commissions. It was deep crisis back then. So we thought, how can we then, you know, get our work done, or how can we go into commissions? One part we thought, why don't we initiate stuff ourselves? You know, we have a lot of ideas, we have a lot of concepts, and maybe it's just a matter of finding the right people that also like our ideas and concepts to get them done. And one of the first ones we did was suites, and this is also about vacancy and the possibility that it can give a city. Because in Amsterdam you have a lot of vacant buildings, and they are not like this nice one, but you know, the big size of this one is quite nice, and in Amsterdam we have them too, but there's also these very little vacant spaces and in structures, around the train tracks we have cranes that, you know, our industrial heritage, and just stand there empty. We thought those are actually super cool places to do something with. And then we had this other idea, you know, this design hotel. This in Amsterdam, we have a couple that each room is designed by a specific designer, and that is a super nice experience because you can come back every year and find another room around you. And then we thought, if we combine this design hotel idea, this concept, with all those vacant little spaces in Amsterdam, we have the city as a design hotel. So the streets become your corridors, and all the things around those little suites become your facilities. So the local bakery can become your breakfast restaurant. So with this idea, we made a little booklet about how we thought about it, and we went then to one of the most creative hoteliers in Amsterdam, the Lloyd Hotel. If you go to Amsterdam and have a night there, stay there. It's pretty cool. They have a design hotel, so we thought those are the people to convince that we should do this. And they were enthusiastic right away. So together we went to the municipality in Amsterdam to say, okay, what can we do? Are there spots available? And then to our surprise, there were quite some spots available. Because this guy is going to lose his job in Amsterdam, and this guy is a bridge guard. So what he does is, when the boat comes, he opens the bridge. When the boat goes is gone, he closes it again. But Amsterdam is making this whole thing digital. So this guy is not needed anymore, leaving all these little bridge houses, as we call them, vacant. They are already vacant right now. And there's 28 of these little houses in Amsterdam spread around the city, and they are made by pretty cool, famous architects in the past. So they have a time frame of 100 years in which they were built and designed. So 28 in total. So we thought, well, this is actually great. There's 28 little hotel rooms in town that we can use. But then we went back to the municipality and we said, yeah, we're going to do it. And then the municipality told us, yeah, that's very nice, but we cannot just give it to you. You know, we have to make a competition out of it so everyone can join. But, oh, come on, we cannot do this. This is the winning idea. So how can we seduce you to take us, you know, and to do it just with us? And to do that, we actually made these little candies, a box of sweets, you know. They were called, the project was called Sweets, so we made little sweets in the shape of the bridge houses, and we went to the municipality and talked to the aldermen, and then they were sold. So the competition was skipped, and we were in the trajectory to start developing this hotel. And it was published, and people came to us and said, "Oh, that's so cool! Now I actually see what I'm biking past each day, and I see it's a little bridge house," because they weren't aware of those things and what their function was. And that actually triggered us again. Whoopsie. That goes... Where do I point this thing at? There. It's going all the way. That actually triggered us, because developing such an idea into reality takes a long time. We're actually still working on it. And this was like 4 years ago. But we thought this story of the bridge houses in Amsterdam is so rich. There are so many stories it tells. You know, they I already said, say a lot about the architecture and how it developed in 100 years. It tells a lot about how the city developed in over 100 years. So we thought, why don't we make an exhibition out of it? And we did. We made each house, we made a little model, and we exposed them, and we told the whole story behind the bridge house, and also how their impact, or how they were a kind of effect, or how they were indicators of what happened to the city. And besides that, we also had workshops with people, with experts, with students, and with residents of, okay, so we have this hotel, what can we do with it, and what more can it bring to the city? So it was a very, a lot of people from Amsterdam were involved in the project. And they came up with cool ideas. So for this one, to make this big round bed right in the top. If you know the Playboy Mansion, it also had this big circular bed. It was a cool thing to copy. And for this one, there were ideas to make a big sauna space in it. And this was 4 years back. We made a book with this kind of like a catalog of all the bridge houses in the city, with a map for tourists so they can have a new biking tour around. But as I said, it's still ongoing. It's now the phase between getting a contract together between the hotel guys and the municipality, and that takes a long time. Another important tool for us, also in the Swedish project, is collaboration. The Keuvel, which is, I think, now one of our most famous projects, is all based on collaboration. This was a kind of competition from the municipality. This is Amsterdam, the central station. This is in the north of Amsterdam, and this is an old shipyard. And the shipyard is completely empty. It has been for like 10, 15 years. But there are three, and the municipality wanted to do something with this shipyard. They wanted to make it into a creative hub, a creative cluster. So they asked creative companies in the Netherlands actually to come up with ideas how to develop that. And there were only two entries. One of us was us. And that was because there were quite some difficulties here. Because as you see, there's no building on this shipyard. There is the soil is polluted. They only, if you won the competition, you could only use it for 10 years. And after 10 years, you had to get out again. And they wanted to make it a creative cluster. That means that you cannot put commercial rents there. So you had to keep the rents very low, meaning you cannot spend a lot of money. If you won the competition, we would get 250,000 euros to develop it, which is actually very little because we needed to make 1,500 square meters of space. We came up with the idea together with a whole group of creatives, amongst which a landscape architect who was actually dealing with this polluted soil, and he had a research about it, and it was about plants that you could plant in polluted soil that would suck up the soil. It's called phytoremediation. And those plants just need the heavy metals that are in the ground to grow. And if they grow, you can cut them away and your contaminated soil will disappear. So it will be cleaner. In a matter of 10 years, we could get it quite a bit cleaner. So we thought, okay, let's plant the whole site with these grasses and roots. And then from another project, we knew that there were houseboats in Amsterdam that are of no value if you don't have a permit to dock your boat. And all the permits are already gone. So if someone needs to get a new boat, an owner of a houseboat, he wants to get a new boat, he has to get rid of his old boat. And, he cannot just sell it because it has no value. So he has to pay a company to demolish the boat. So we thought, why not take those boats and put them then on this in this new garden, in this sanitizing garden that we made. And then we would make a boardwalk in between the boats so people could go to them. And after 10 years, when we were supposed to leave again, we could just put them in the water and go to the next spot. That was the idea. And we didn't only have the idea, we also had people joining us. So we had a whole community while entering this competition of people that would actually want to rent such a boat. We asked them to find a boat on the internet. We asked them to make a little plan for the boat. So together with 16 initiatives, we handed in our entry with a little image, of course. And then we won. Well, we only had one competitor, so it was not too hard, actually. But the nice thing was, the next day, it was in the newspapers in Amsterdam, saying that we won this competition and that we were looking for boats to put on this land. And the office was, the telephone was ringing all the time of people from Amsterdam that wanted to donate their boat and see it revive at the Keuvel. So this was the first one we towed out of the city. And we made, what we promised to the municipality, we would make it a very sustainable place. So we actually gave new skin and new insulation to all the boats and created the whole idea about how to make it a very sustainable incubator space. But we also got some weird stuff. This is a foam house made by a building company in the north of Holland that wanted to prove that his houses were very light and that they could float on water. But after a couple years, he was done with it, so we could also use that. And then we had this sustainability office joining us that made a plan of for making this the Keuvel an off-grid piece of the city. So we have solar panels on all the boats, so we can provide in our own energy. There is a biogas installation, and we have compost toilets, so people that go to the toilet, they have this little suitcase, and each week they have to put it in the biogas thing, and it will generate energy. So there's all the loops are closed, and the compost is then used again to grow tomatoes on, and it goes pretty far, this whole sustainability idea. And the nice thing is that usually sustainability is a technical thing in the Netherlands, so you have to pay a lot to get the right tools to do it. But we didn't have any money, so this sustainability firm was giving workshops for the people that were renting the boats so they could make their own they could make their sustainable tools and techniques themselves. So they were making the grey water system here, and they were making a heat exchange thing here. So that was a very cheap way of actually attaining our goals. And then in November, I think it was 2013, we were craning the first boats on land. And here you see the boardwalk curving through the boats. And the boardwalk is actually a kind of all the infrastructure that we need. So some power lines and sewerage that we need is all here in the boardwalk, and the boats can just tap into it. And the nice thing of having this community of different initiatives working along with you in a development is that they could start up their own crowdfunding ideas and own crowdfunding campaigns. So this was the cafe that we have there, and they started a crowdfunding campaign to fund their building. And this was becoming quite popular online, and they got, I don't know, like 30,000 euros to start up. And then on the opening of the Keuvel, it was super, super crowded. We had like 3,000 people on this opening event. We never expected that to happen. And it's really because of all these little parts of the community got their own community in to support, to help out. There were a lot of volunteers involved to get this project off the ground. Oh. So here you have some views in the incubator between the boats. We have a little boat ourselves too. And strangely, we got a lot of attention with this project. So we won some Dutch big design prizes. It was even published in the New York Times, and it was published in Japan. I said, how can ever these ugly boats cross the ocean to be published there? But the nice thing, and the even nicer thing about it, was that the ideas behind the Keuvel, so this community and the sustainability about it, were copied by a bigger area. That was the area where the Keuvel was located, the Buiksloten Hammetskold. It's a whole big new area development. And they thought, we need to be more like what they do in the Keuvel. So we need to make a circular area of this whole new development. And then that's when the manifest circular Buiksloten Ham came in. So there are all the project developers and the initiators behind new developments in this area signed it, and they say, okay, we're going to make this a circular area, which is quite special. It's unique in the world. And even our politicians, they come by the Keuvel a lot of times and to see if they can also use the ideas created there for other places in the Netherlands.
So also within the Buiksloten Ham neighborhood, another project is around aggregation, like gathering and clustering. In this case, gathering and clustering people, individuals, in order to get one group as a collective entity in terms of the we. But there's always one initiator. This time it was one lady started with the initiative. Wouldn't it be cool to start living on water? Because water has a dimension. You can be afloat and you're loose from the ground, but while being loose from the ground, why not be entirely loose from infrastructure and be self-supportive, be independent as a small economy? So actually I want to cluster a group of friends around me to make a self-supportive, self-sustaining neighborhood in the social sense, in the energy sense, maybe even be self-sufficient in food production, etc. So that's quite an ambition, quite a vision she had, teaming up in a very early stage together with us in order to find out how could we make this quite far-fetched vision in reality, how to make it feasible. So starting to deal with this group, we found out that actually the financial decomposition of all the different households was a very wide spectrum from, some rich television people, because she was working in the television industry, so some famous people from television owning a lot of money could potentially afford a big boat, but there's also the sound technician, which owns a lot less, but he's within the group of friends, and the social structure was already set. So when we were asked how to make this a feasibility study, well, the first thing that comes to mind, maybe you'll have to let go of the people that cannot afford this much money, because living on water is more expensive, owning a houseboat is already more expensive, let alone to make it self-sufficient, energy self-sufficient with all the techniques involved. So yeah, how to do it. But it's, and the social structure is nice, the assignment is nice. So let's work our way around it. And this actually represents the ambition. So if the project would eventually be in the newspapers, being the most sustainable floating community within the Netherlands, maybe even within Europe. So if this is the given program, and we want private garden, private house, we want collective space, and the ambitions were only growing and growing, we had to make it feasible by providing some sense of reality in that sense. And actually introduce time as a design factor, where we start with the minimum, the minimum essential elements you would need to set up your community around. And while providing this backbone should be able to expand with time. So what we provide you as an end result would only be an initial condition to start developing further on. So actually what you see here is it visible? Is the backbone. It's one collective marina around which the individual houseboats are clustered. Everybody needs an individual house, and we need the infrastructure to connect the different houses. So if this is the backbone that would eventually foster floating gardens, a fishing deck, or maybe a small vegetable garden, or a tool shed, etc., which could be contributed by the community, like somebody who owns a little bit more money who could buy a second-hand shed, but somebody else who has the time, he could maintain the vegetable garden. So, and there's the demonetization. If you have money or time or intellect or knowledge, everything could be valued and contributed into the project on an equal share instead of just only talking money. So where this backbone eventually could grow into the, well, far-fetched ambition, but bringing it closer to reality and actually starting with a feasible plan where, well, this is the actual structure. It's changing a bit. It's happening as we speak, the urban planning and the individual development of the houseboats. Living off the grid, self-supportive, floating 35 households in one, close community in the north of Amsterdam. And this is what it might look, well, I think, in about 3 to 4 years, let's say. So that's quite a special project, working with, well, a group of individuals with this vision and how to guide this vision by providing visualizations, by providing workshops, etc., and helping them to get steps further without letting go of your high ambition. So also, and dealing with a group, dealing with individuals, actually communication is a very important instrument, is an important tool. In this case, an empty office building in the south of Amsterdam. Most of our projects are in Amsterdam, okay? That's our playground, let's put it like that. So an empty office building, but potentially to be reused as future apartments, where we created a visualization, actually adding one extra layer on top of it. And there's a very nice courtyard, which is, well, the collective space, and where the individual units are surrounded the collective space. So the collective space is the epicenter. That's where you once again get together, but also to introduce multiple shared spaces, which could either be a roof terrace with a small pond, or sharing washing machines, sharing electrical vehicles, sharing a fitness space, sharing a living room, etc. And so revolving around the fact of, is it not also possible maybe to own less and share more? And what we did with the office building prior to this one, but in this case in a residential building. And it drew a lot of attention. People coming in and were actually inspired by this new kind of typology, or not new kind of, but a fresh typology in terms of providing collective space, own less, share more. So we drew in quite different bunch of people in the different age groups, different income groups, etc. And then in these kind of offline meetings, finding out, talking with them, communicating with them, and finding out their individual preferences and finding out what is the common interest, and should we make the fitness space? Should we go for the electrical vehicles? Because we don't put it in if you don't ask for it. So we need to get into that dialogue to find out what your actual individual demands are and what your collective demands are to shape the building around as a custom-made suit around you guys to make it perfectly fit. And this is what eventually came out, and it will be, the old office building will be stripped this summer, and I think it will be inhabited next summer. So we wrap around balconies. This is, potentially the courtyard on the inside. Starting from the collective spaces into the more individual spaces, we decompose the building in multiple smaller volumes, as in small Tetris blocks. You can cluster two or three smaller units, or you can take a medium one and a smaller one, or you just take a big one. And that's how The differentiation in configuration provides opportunity for high income, low income classes, old and young, all to mingle together. So eventually, and the common interest in this building is the fact that people are interested in sharing space, where we actually expected lots of young urban people to come in, but we have all age groups and all income groups, making it a very rich social structure, actually, which I think is also a very sustainable social structure. People will live there happily after. Then more on the individual side, and providing the loft, and on the inside, you can fully customize your interior space. So this is, once again, four times the same Casco space and the loft space, where you can insert a small box with functions, a wall with functions, a flip-up bed, etc., and to make it kind of smart lofts, and because the apartments are quite small, own less. Even if you own less square meters, it's less expensive, but you want to increase the potential of the use of the space. Well, this is the wall apartment or the block apartment as examples. But actually working our way into this formula and the smart lofts formula, clustering people around a given subject. We've won a tender with the Westlandgracht building, which is to be a newly erected building, but are also working together with a group, working with the same system of which functions should we start sharing. This is still in pitch mode, you could say. And another one we just won 2 weeks ago, which is a former school, which will also be entirely renovated using this system. So actually, the strategy or the way of thinking how to deal with people and how to enable them the provision of space works for us also as a scalable principle. And we can speed up that process. How can we more efficiently talk to lots of people and also bring that to another level in terms of online tools?
Yeah, so in those projects we also use online tools to know actually what the people want. It's we're getting better and better in it, but we also see the potential of this online tools to look at what people want and also to use that for these vacant buildings and how to fill them up with new and fresh ideas. And that's why we launched Crowd Building, which is a platform. The thing is, in the Netherlands, we have quite a lot of vacant buildings. We have around 8 million square meters of vacant office space, but there are also a lot of monumental buildings that are just vacant. And at the same time, we have a lot of people that are actually looking for a house but cannot find one or cannot afford one. So we think, why is it so difficult to match these two together? You know, why is it so difficult to use those vacant buildings to give those people a place to live? Because if I'm browsing online looking for a house, I can only find little houses, you know, that are just 100 square meters, but a very large building such as this one, I cannot buy as an individual. And there's a reason for that, obviously, because there's an owner of this building, and if you as an individual want to live there, he's not interested because you can never afford that building. So you would need a whole group of people with you to actually persuade him to start talking. But where can you find such a group, and where can you start talking to these building owners? There's no place for that. So we thought, what if we create this online platform where actually that is happening, where a building owner of a vacant building can put his building as a case, and then people just looking for a house can see the opportunity and see people who also share the same ambition to live in it and then form a group. So they actually find their new neighbors online. And if this match is made, there starts to be value and potential for developers, for architects, for builders that can pick up such a case and start developing it. And maybe that's a way to kickstart these transformations of vacant office space in this case, all online. And we had this idea, and again, the same way as we did with the Suites project, we started to find our partners, and we have now two developing partners that also see that this is quite a cool thing to do, and they invested a little bit of money to, for instance, make this movie that explains the idea a bit better than I do.
In the Netherlands, there are over 7 million square meters of vacant office space. At the same time, thousands of people are searching online for a place to live. But how can one person transform an office building into a home? For that, you would need a whole group of people. Imagine that people could find such a group through a web-based platform where vacant buildings will be presented to this online community. No, not as empty office buildings, but as great ideas. At Craft Building, architects can pitch exciting transformation concepts. Apartments with a huge roof terrace, for example. Or with a shared recording studio. Or even with a dog parlor. How about a private swimming pool and gym then? This way we can see which buildings and concepts are liked by the crowd. And with enough people, a great idea can transform a vacant building into a realistic plan and an affordable dream house with great neighbours. Together with you, Crowd Building makes it possible. So if you have a vacant building, a great idea, or a lifestyle desire, join us at crowdbuilding.nl. Crowdbuilding.nl. Vacancy has never been this fun.
So this was the movie we created, and then we posted it online, and it was viewed a lot of times. So we were on a lot of stages to pitch this idea, but it still is quite a challenge to get buildings for our platform, because private owners, they don't really like to show their issues online. But fortunately, we have municipalities that are also dealing with these issues, and they are more and more willing to put their vacant building stock on our platform. So it is kind of a Kickstarter, actually, for office transformations. Well, here is the municipality building that Martijn just talked about. So on the platform, you can find buildings. And we thought, you know, a vacant office building is not so pretty, so we need to make little nice illustrations so everyone likes to click on the cards. So we're always making these little diagrams of them. And then when you click on such a diagram, you get a bit more info on the building, and you can start following it. And if you follow a building, you'll be updated on all the things that happen to it. And you can, you know, here, for instance, we have now 30 followers, so there's a group of 30 that could potentially start living there. And then people can also suggest ideas on what to do with the building. So if I say, yeah, I want this building to become a place for elderly people, and then it's online, and then other people that share my idea, they can also vote on my idea. So then we see what the ambition or what the wishes of the crowd is for this building. So in that way you can make visible what actually the people will live there would want to have. So you can create communities. So for instance, communities that like to cook, or that like music, or that like a sustainable building. And when we have those ideas and we have those buildings, we give those to an architect as a brief, and he will design or start designing a design for the building. And that will be put online again to harvest more people, to get more people enthusiastic. And when we have enough people for it, we will actually start the transformation. But we thought when we started this platform that it would be only ugly office buildings, but it's not the case. So I said there's a lot of monuments, and monuments will sell themselves. A lot of people would love to live in them, so we don't have to put a lot of effort into those. But then there's also these really ugly buildings, and that's where architects can come in to seduce and to say, hey, but it could look like this. And then you get some more people in. So this is one of the first ones we're actually doing. This is in Rotterdam. It is an old factory that used to look like this. You see that the time made it a bit uglier. Used to be quite nice. So we had our first crowd building session in this building with a lot of people. So we had like 50 people online that were following, and we had a group of 25 that was in the offline crowd building workshop, voting and giving ideas. A very, very enthusiastic crowd we had. And this is the ambition to make it into a building like this one. But now we have to find people that actually want to buy it and to start developing it for real. Well, that's big buildings and vacant buildings. We have another concept for residential individual buildings that are new. The thing is that the Netherlands is a country for project developers. So usually when you have a residential area, there's one project developer and there's commissions one architect to make a design for the whole area. And in the crisis times, this didn't happen anymore because the project developers didn't have money or the banks wouldn't lend in the money. So this is changing in the Netherlands. People are stimulated by the government to start building their own houses again. And builders have a smart way of diving into this new market, into this new niche. And we found that out because what municipalities now do is when they have lots for sale where people can buy their own house, they have these manifestations where individuals can meet architects, but where individuals can also meet builders. So Martijn and I were on such a market 4 years ago. And there were architects on one side of this market and there were builders on the other side with all ready-made designs in a catalog. We call them the catalog builders. And to our surprise and frustration, those catalog builders, there were a lot of people browsing through the catalogs. And on the side of the architects, there was no one looking at their projects. And on the way back, we thought, what's happening? Why are architects not popular at all with individuals? And we thought, well, it's actually quite logical because what a catalog builder can show is how the house is going to look. He can show how much the house is going to cost, and he can guarantee you when the house is going to be finished. And those are all things, securities, that an architect cannot offer a person. So we thought we need to actually put architects in the position of those catalog builders. The thing is that architects are actually very expensive. It's kind of a luxury for a person in the Netherlands to have an architect because it's all one-to-one, it's a long trajectory, and it's quite expensive. And we thought those catalog builders do that in a smarter way because they actually just design a whole bunch of houses and they can sell it, and they only have all the expenses that a person has with a single custom architect. They only have it once, and they can sell the house over and over again. So why don't we do the same thing? Because we, with a whole team of architects, could make a whole lot of houses, and every individual could find the perfect house for him. So that's what that was our ambition, to make such a platform. But then we had to pick, okay, what kind of houses are we going to build? And then we found out that 55% of the Dutch housing stock is actually row housing, and it looks like this, and we don't like it. So if there's one place to improve in the Netherlands, it's these kind of areas. So we thought, what if we take this typology as a starting point, and we say, okay, a lot is 5.70 meters wide, and it has a certain depth, and we ask our architectural friends to start designing for in that specific size. And then we ask a builder to give a price for their designs, and we can put those designs online. And then if we have a new location, people can actually just pick a house out of our cool architectural houses, and then we build it for them. So we have more of these kind of concepts in the Netherlands, but what usually builders do is they ask one architect to design a base house and then have them design all additions, so you can have an extra level, or you can build it a little bit more on the backside, which is not real variation. But what we do is we have the builder, he has a certain building system, we give that building system to the architect. It's kind of a Lego system, architect can play with it. So we say, let the architect play with that system and you get a lot of variation. Whereas if you would have the end user use those same Lego bricks, you will not get real variation in the houses. Well, we created a whole big team. We have in our business now 22 different architectural offices, also very big ones in the Netherlands that make houses for us. We have a library now of almost 90 different designs, and it's all online. And the nice thing is that they're not only just variations in the facade, but they are actually all different on the inside. So you can, with a very big group of people, of architects, you can make very specific houses. So you can make houses for
for disabled people. You can make houses for working, or you can make houses where you can have your grandparents or your parents live too. So those houses are all put online, and when we have a location, we find the locations ourselves. People can pick a house. So this is one of our first projects in The Hague. And here you see the first row of houses that was selected by these happy people. And then a year later, we had the row there. But the thing is, we thought that people would like to have a very individual and their own house, and it would be different from the neighbors. But as you see, people actually like to have security, and they like to have the same house as their neighbor, because if the neighbor picked that house, well, it must be good for me too. So we as architects don't really like that. So for the next projects, we say you can only build one house in a row. So when one person picks a house, we take it out of the library. And this is, well, another view of that street. And the cool thing of doing this online is that we actually have real-time analysis. So we can see what people like. We can see what houses people click on. People can give feedback to architects, and architects can improve their houses each time they sell it. Because an architect, he does not get paid when designing the house, but he gets paid when he sells a house. So, and he can sell the house over and over and over again. So that's a new kind of business model for Dutch architects, at least.
Yeah, as you've seen in these past two projects, and we like to interact with individuals, we like to interact with groups and have them involved in the creation of space. Yeah, as an example, the result of the street being built is actually the result of their individual choices summed up as a collective street. But besides private ownership of residential space or project space, we also want to, as urban planners, we also want to indulge ourselves in public space. So within the public realm, actually everybody is an owner and nobody is an owner. You don't possess something. So how can we deal with the level of interaction in public space? We'll have to create stuff, and actually the creation itself might be the tool to learn from the interaction and from the different behavior. So I'll show two projects. This one was in a vacant lot, left vacant, but to be built with new houses in the future. There is an existing neighborhood in the city of Leiden, also in the Netherlands. There is already a new development, which did get realized, and this one will be left empty for another 5 years. But what to do with this empty lot in the meantime? Because actually now it's a big burden dividing the different neighborhoods and actually providing a big threshold towards the center. So what we thought, like, opening up this piece of land and actually shaping a kind of collective forum, wouldn't it be possible to invite people in where this actually is a zone of rejection? Don't go here, it's not allowed to be here, to make it an inviting space. Like, come over and let's meet the neighbors, because maybe you don't have an idea of the people that actually used to live here, and find out more about your closely related neighbors. So within a time span of 2 weeks, this was the empty lot, we erected this structure, which was built of the materials on site. So we have the empty sand lot, and we have the fences that normally keep you out, and now we want to use the fences to actually invite you in. So putting the fences straight up, putting a fabric on it to hint some kind of mystery being tucked away in the forum structure. So when you enter through one of these alleyways, you don't know what to expect, but as soon as you're in, you're in the big open, semi-public, is it private, is it public, is it collective arena? So somebody else entering from another side, you directly have eye contact, and it would stimulate some kind of dialogue, at least that's what we thought. So let's give it a go, pull it off, leave it there for 2 weeks, and see it as a research instrument, study the behavior in public space. Not only in the offline environment, but directly also indicating it in the offline environment. Of course, we have to broadcast the fact that we are pulling off this pavilion, so to invite people to get attention for the project. Yeah, please come over. There will be a small barbecue hosted by us and explaining some of the thinking behind the project. And actually, besides the activated public space, you can see this in time as actually the heartbeat of the project. Here it wasn't there. This is where it started to take off by the online behavior of people liking the project, and the project was taken away. So this is where it is in use in one of the last weekends, and because it has to grow, people have to get used to it. They're not expected to go in, because normally these fences are expected to keep you out. So we had to repeat the message, please come over, please come in. We even had to pull in a small jazz band in order to get them in. We thought, like, if we provide this open space, you can program it. Maybe you're a musician and you just start playing music, or if you want to play with kids, just come over and play with kids. Didn't happen. So we had to do the programming, and then they said, oh, right, this is quite nice, you know, with this jazz band. What's the next program you'll be putting off? Like, no, this is like an exception. We put it off once. It's you guys that should do the programming. So, okay. Also, we learned from that people are used to consume. If there's a program, then they want to join. But if they're given an opportunity, they're kind of hesitating, like, what am I expected to do? Is it really me now being possible to take the initiative? That's, well, quite a threshold to step over. So that's what we learned. Nevertheless, if we scale that up and the creation, doing stuff and studying that and getting in touch with people, another project is the Negen Stegen, the Nine Alleys. Downtown Amsterdam, it's the really old part of the city of Amsterdam. This is the big central station. This is the old waterway with the Dam Square. And so this is the first mile when entering the city from the central station. Actually, it's over-commercialized, very much based on consumption and consumerism, buying souvenirs, going to a bar, the pizza shops, etc. Very homogeneously programmed. Not interesting, especially not for us. Residing in Amsterdam, I never go there because I don't have a reason to go there. But at the same time, it doesn't give you a true representation of what Amsterdam has to offer. If this is the first mile you enter, and you think, well, if this is Amsterdam, well... I hope there is more to offer, and of course there is more to offer, but within the first mile you don't find it. So what if we could start programming, like, if from the main axis? There's the nine small alleyways, and these actually also, once again, public space, but very intimate, nice, actually fragile spaces. Could these not host more artistic cultural program to provide a more more extended view of the city of Amsterdam, what the city of Amsterdam had to offer? So here you see an example of three of these alleyways and tucked away in these behind these commercial buildings. And could we not make it a representation of the design and cultural institutions? And we have a movie academy, we have a design academy, we have an academy of architecture, we have a fashion academy, etc., etc. So all the creative and cultural institutions could be represented, all of them, in one of these alleys, and to show what we also have to offer, that we are a creative, artistic city, that we want to go out and experiment and explore. And for us, it's a way of actually permanently putting off temporary projects. So every alleyway would be a small stage for a cultural installation. So you could say it's nine venues, as in a museum, which also has nine venues, but then in an open-air structure. Then talking again to municipality, like, what's allowed to put off, and because it's public space, you should not be able to climb, you should not hurt yourself, etc., etc. So we had to find out a handbook, what is allowed and what's not allowed, like a guidebook. If you're an artist, read the guidebook, and within the freedom of the guidebook, you can do anything. And we needed to get an agreement on the guidebook first. So this is some examples of what could happen, and we're still working on the permissions and the commissions for it to actually happen, but the city is happy with it, and they want to support us to get it into the next level. So how could we activate and temporarily activate these alleyways and start studying the behavior of people? Would they be interested? Would they change the behavior? How could you play with the perspective in an alleyway and to make you more curious to find out what's around the corner? Can we play with the landscape and the landscape as maybe a representation of an agricultural landscape or a furniture landscape? Well, some kind of bold ideas or a very simple but high impact volume to be squeezed in the alleyway. Or on the other hand, it could host a long table to start inviting people in this small, intimate, but yet public space to get into encounter, where it's now a very, you don't start a conversation with the people you bump into, like it's a very unknown area. Where you don't feel really personal and you don't show your personal expression. Inviting them in an alleyway like this to provide a space of comfort and actually to open up and feel free to express yourself. So that's actually the last project. Now, summing it up in and the tools which are laying under these kind of projects, and of course there's multiple tools in multiple projects, just as a quick summary, and the role and impact or relevance of community in our projects. the reason of initiation and to start the lead ourselves and then to eventually find clients in kicking off our own projects. The value of collaboration, we hardly ever do it all by ourselves, and we need to find a client, we need to work together with a sociologist or a landscape architect. The clustering and aggregation of individuals in getting projects on the go, the existence of communication, visualization in terms of gaining trust and increasing the belief that a project could in the end be feasible and realized. The interaction is of course very important for us, and also, and as I mentioned here, the reason of direct action and go for it, direct creation, and then find out afterwards what works and what doesn't work. And I think also here, and this could be a perfect space to just go out and experiment, and then by doing experiments, finding out what works and what doesn't work. So maybe it could be a couple of years of just a laboratory for architectural activation or an open urban study lab or whatsoever. We'll find out more tomorrow. Hopefully a lot of you guys will be also here. That's it. Maybe a couple of questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is time for questions. I'm sure we all feel very inspired, maybe even intimidated by some of the ideas. But this should not be the case, because I think we're lucky to have you here to answer us. You can ask in English, de magyarul is lehet kérdezni, illetve biztos más nyelveken is. I would start with one question, because so everything you do seems to be very experimental. So you go into the unknown, let's say trying out new methods and new fields. And I remember telling me that, for example, in the case of the Kerville, the city was helping with suspending a little bit regulations. Yes, so they didn't expect exactly the same things to be respected as in other parts of the town. So I would be interested in general, who are the actors that are helping these kinds of experimentation? Because it's you talked about the press as well. So who are the actors that are helping experimentation?
Well, maybe to start with the municipality, because they cannot give us special treatment, because then they will be making a shame of themselves. But on the other hand, they see the potential success of this project and they want to make it happen. So if there is some kind of off-radar trajectories, where in this case of the houseboats, like when a structure is on the land, it's considered a structure, and then laws of construction and built environment apply. As long as the structure is on water, it does not fit to the laws of structure because it's not on the land. So when you do the renovation while the thing is on the water and then hoist it on the land, well, it's a given fact. It was already like that prior to being on the land. So that's one way of dodging the laws, and it was actually a given hint by one of the office clerks from municipality.
But those people are really key in a lot of our projects, so you always need the enlightened people inside government. And there are a couple of them, there are not many. But I think we are very fortunate that we live in Amsterdam and that the Amsterdam municipality is very open-minded for new experiments, for new ideas. They even have their own little workshops where they put office clerks together to look at their work and how they can improve it, and to go in town and look at the Kerville and learn from it, and you know, start being open-minded and see that as a government, you don't have to be just sticking to your rules, but you can actually use them to create better things. I think that living in Amsterdam is crucial for the success of a lot of our projects.
It is fortunate. They are still a pain in the ass, but at least they try their best to come over that. And because they also see that they are part of the city and that there's lots of initiatives that need to be enabled to get into the next level of the city. And they are the guys that should actually facilitate instead of block these kind of processes. And indeed, they try their best and put their best efforts.
What about the press? Do you always get good press? Because you highlighted the influence, you know, the impact of newspapers.
Yeah, I think we actually are lucky with that, because it's not that we start calling people. It's just that we put our efforts into our projects, and if the press sees it and they like it, they write about it. But I'm not really sure what kind of influence it has, you know. Of course, it's nice because if a project is published in a newspaper outside the Netherlands, then we get flights to say something about it in that country. That's nice, but
sometimes it helps to make a project more self-fulfillingly speed up its development. Maybe by example of the Keuvel, we won the competition, polluted soil will be cleansed by organic scheme and reuse of houseboat. And then indeed the next day people start calling, I have a second-hand houseboat I want to get rid of, maybe you guys want to have it for your project. Or the Swedes objects, since we prevented it from being into an open competition, it was launched in the newspaper, okay, and this initiative to make it into a boutique hotel room spread out over the city, how nice is that? And people mentally know that, okay, this project is a given fact, it will be hotel rooms. So nobody starts asking, hey, what about the competition? I never had a chance. I also have a good idea for that. So in that sense, the news is a very important factor in the public debate or the mental appreciation or allocation of the stuff we do. But yeah, we don't actively engage press, but of course it works.
Now I'm thinking about it, it is actually media that is very important to us. And you know, we have press is very good because it has an audience by itself. You know, we don't have to target, people just find it in the news. And what we do with our platforms is to really target our buildings and ask you, okay, what do you want with it? But the press can, you know, it just comes to us, and that's a very good thing. So it is a medium to approach people, and that people can find you again. And for that, it's very important.
It propagates faster than we could propagate it by lectures and lectures.
Thanks. I'm sure there are questions.
Hi, I'm curious if you think that your projects might have an effect on how people relate to architects. Maybe your projects have a strategy to jostle people's creativity to some extent, because you also talked about a little bit of a consumer culture's complacency when it comes to choosing and people like to be safe, etc. But it also sounds like you get a lot of response from people, and I really am curious about that it's not this kind of top-down architecture where you tell people what they want, but you actually hear from them. Have you been pleasantly surprised by how people react, or do you see some kind of change? Or
well, in some cases, if you have a workshop with people, your role as an architect is also to inspire those people, you know, and to trigger them into thinking different things than they would usually do when I was not in front of them, you know. So you have the consumer, or you can involve a consumer in a workshop, and then his eyes open, and oh, I didn't know I could also do that. Or we didn't know when we share, we can have a sauna, or we could have a roof terrace, or whatever. Or for design, you know, design also, we can trigger people as architects. But so what we try to do in those workshops is not putting it so this is going to be it. You know, we want to give a wide variation of options, and then people get inspired. And if you have this group enthusiasm in a workshop, then they start inspiring themselves. And then you get to another level. So. Absolutely, yeah. A lot of times things pop up out of a workshop that we would never come up ourselves.
And actually, the crowd building is stimulating for individuals or eventually collectives to provide input in, because now we put up some suggestions, but eventually it would be you putting up a suggestion. Let's make a fitness space in this building. And if you find multiple people around you that agree with you, well, then it's the most obvious program to be hosted in the building. And then we'll be happy to find any kind of surprise what comes out of the crowd, out of the demands of society. So in that sense, we're curious for more surprises to come. And because the interesting thing is, some of the projects are projects, and then they're finished, or, well, not really finished. And some of them will never be finished because they're continuous and scalable systems, actually, where we indeed learn and study and improve and go sideways to find out if that works better, or go the other way to find out if responsiveness increases. So it's give and take, and we only have a straight idea where we want to go, but the path, that's the experiment, or how would you say it? The path is our endeavor in reaching the mission in the end.
Yeah, I saw your on your homepage a very interesting project where you rejuvenated the backyards of an area. And it's a very important issue because you were speaking about vacant buildings, but we have vacant spaces, courtyards, parks all over the city, although we live in very densely populated, overbuilt, overpopulated areas. So I would be very curious how you created from these backyards something which is a community hub, and what kind of functions are there, what's the direction of this, is it already done or it's in the process? So if you could give me some more info about this.
It's Alkmaar. What we did, this was a social housing area, and it consists out of three big housing blocks. Like I think there's lives around, what would be like 50, 60 houses around a courtyard that is all, the courtyard is all privately owned backyards that are not so pretty. So what we proposed, it was a housing corporation that asked us the question, how can we improve this neighborhood? And then we said, well, people only know this, you know, they live on the street, but they actually have neighbors in the back, and there's a whole big possibility to do something with that. So there was limited funds, so we said, why don't we take away all these fences between the gardens and open it up and make it one big collective garden in which people can do whatever. So we made a whole set of like a toolkit of things that people could pick from, as from play fields or a chicken farm or whatever, and they could program it themselves. Unfortunately, that was also in the crisis times, and then this housing corporation, they had quite a difficult time with their finances, so the project stopped.
But one project, and doing this project leads always to the next project, and somehow they are accumulating a way of thinking, and the Hek Den Ham, which is a newly built neighborhood in the circular Buiksloterham area, and that's also within the master plan still dedicated spots for some public space, either being collective smaller courtyards. But then what to pull off a children's playground, but you don't know will there be children living there. You know that there will be new residents, so could we not like democratize the fact of what should be programmed in this spot, in this space? Maybe not to take one decision which lasts for the next 10 years. Maybe we say, well, let's start off with a Chez de Boule area and then maybe a barbecue spot or a small children's playground afterwards. So how could you facilitate the process of people to speak up and engage, and like democratizing that process and engaging with the public space? Well, I was there, and it started off as a pitch, and it's still out there in one of our ID lockers, you could say, to actually get these people engaged and also get the process visualized on an online platform. We will provide some suggestions. Suggestions are open to be provided by the individuals themselves, and how to catalyze the process and actually activating the minds and people who are stakeholders in that area, and because you can just go there and don't care. Or and also in the Netherlands, people complain a lot, and then like, yeah, why did they make a children playground here? Well, if you're complaining, you can also do something about it. So and to get them actively engaged. If you spend energy on negatively complaining, you rather put your energy in positively contributing. So that's where we're also looking for the public space and programming public space. But also to a large extent, engaging them through online media, but it's still in the ID box.
Familiar phenomenon, I think. There was a question.
Yes, I would like to ask you about the online platform of crowd building and about its possibilities of getting the people who have financial sources as well. So you mentioned that you have followers of specific buildings, and then you have ideas coming in. You have votes for it. You have you have offline meetings and workshops. But still, the money which makes it happen is missing. And how you hope to connect it, and how you hope to get it for these kind of grassroots projects?
Well, actually, the people that are interested, they can get a mortgage. And when you have 30 mortgages, you have a lot of money. So that's how you can...
Actually, be linked to end.
Yeah, they want to live there.
Cool.
So all we need then is a builder that can advance the money, start transforming the house, and you know, cover for the expenses for the first part. And then when the people buy the house, he gets paid with little interest.
Cool.
So that's a very we do that with all the Smart Love projects also in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need investors.
And I think the key there is that you take out the risk component, because a classical developer, where you would hire an architect, and architect would make up a nice story, I advise you this and a nice image, let's make it a very nice fancy building, okay, put it on paper, get in a permit, start construction, or while starting construction you need to find the people to get it sold. But before, and you already invest money in it, and you don't know if the apartments will be sold, so we actually flip around. Before we do anything, let's find out if people are interested, and what's the discourse, what's the potential program. If there's enough people interested, let's make a sketch, because then it makes sense to make a sketch. If they get more excited, well, we can make a scheme design. And if they get more excited, and so by minimizing risk, because finding out that people are getting on board more secured, then you can invest your time and money in a more secure way, because you know the chances will be lower that you spend your money on the basis of risk, because we eliminate risk, which
you
is very...
You also put work into the first sketches without receiving any commission?
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, in that sense, we invest a lot of our time, but that's mainly on belief and enthusiasm, I guess, and finding out in the past 6 years that it actually works. It brings us projects.
In the audience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.